From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As we continue our coverage of the She the People Summit on September 20th in San Francisco, California, we turn now to Rashida Tlaib, who won a primary race in Michigan to replace outgoing Representative John Conyers. In 2008, Rashida Tlaib was the first Muslim woman to ever serve in the Michigan legislature. Together with Ilhan Omar, she will be the first Muslim American female member of Congress this fall. Tlaib was one of several women of color running for office who spoke at the She the People Summit in San Francisco. She was a guest on a live broadcast on KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley that I co-hosted, along with writer, journalist, and activist Antonia Yuhas. Special thanks to KPFA Pacifica Radio for sponsoring this coverage.
Welcome to the program, Rashida.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being with us here. How important is it for you to be part of such a gathering? Because in Michigan, you're there, you know, in a sort of, not isolation, but to actually see yourself as part of a larger trend, a larger
movement.
Historic movement. How important is that?
It's incredible. Like last night, we just all got together, and it was the first time in probably a long time since some of the immigrant rights rallies I've been at or some of the grassroots work I've been doing in the city around economic justice issues where I can be in the room with women that look like me, that have those beautiful, unique names, immigrant parents that we can laugh about, you know, just talking about all those things that kind of connect us. It was incredible. I've been in room with a lot of women, but this was the first time I felt a direct connection with so many.
And you're running unopposed. So when you become the next representative for Detroit in Michigan, you will be the first Muslim American woman in Congress. How significant is that? And how much does it shape the way that you are looking at the policy position you're going to hold in Congress?
Absolutely. You know, and I'm blessed that I am not going to be alone. You know, Sister Ilhan Omar from Minnesota is also going to be with me hand in hand as we walk onto the United States congressional floor. I tell her all the time, you know, we didn't run because we were Muslim, but we ran because we were very much community organizers and activists in our community, but we're also moms that are raising children of Muslim faith. And I can tell you, you know, for us, we have that unique lens. The fact that, you know, I know my mother, who is targeted because she wears the hijab right after Trump was elected, literally a man at a grocery store yelling at her to take it off. The fact that, you know, my son questions his identity now more than ever. And this is not the country that I love and we all love. And what an incredible, beautiful story and just a moment of light that Ilhan Omar being elected by predominantly non-Muslim community. Same for me. You know, we don't represent this tremendous amount. It was fellow Americans who don't share the same faith or even ethnicity as us that elected us and believed in us. And to me, that possibility of what we can be as a country is what, you know, being able to walk onto the congressional floor, what that really means, that comes with me.
So as a representative in Congress, what are the policies then that you see you're going to be championing? The seat that you're filling was held by John Conyers, who was seen as a progressive champion, but you're a Muslim woman, and you represent symbolically, at least to Trump and all of his supporters, the enemy, and that is really tragic.
Yeah, it is. You know, I know this. Like, I represent the third poorest congressional district in the country. So economic justice issues is at the forefront. I have working families that have not been able to own their own homes. Less than half of my families own their own homes. The poverty level is so concentrated in some certain areas. I have a large community of returning residents in my district. The challenges are never ending. But one thing that I can tell you is, you know, Congressman Conyers had so much tremendous amount of courage. He voted against the Iraq War when it was unpopular too. He voted against the Patriot Act when it was unpopular too. That kind of legacy, that kind of courage that we are lacking now more than ever is still in me. I mean, I grew up watching him push back against some of the extremist agendas by both Democrats and Republicans when it was in response to fear or response to something that we knew that by getting away from our core values it was going to hurt us more in the long run. But I can tell you that, you know, Justice for All Civil Rights Act is my first ever proposal that I'm going to push forward. And, you know, you go to Rashida for Congress CanadaCongress.com, and you'll see that, for me, the Civil Rights Act of 64 has been watered down. I'm an attorney that has watched the conservative courts push back and say that you have to show intent to show discrimination, where I truly believe the intent of the Civil Rights Act of 64, that you show desperate impact. If you show the impact in itself is discriminatory, then yeah, we can push back against the discriminatory practices by banks that don't allow people of color to own their own homes in the 13th congressional district. And I can see that the practice of redlining, insurance redlining in my district is so tremendous. It's stagnant. I mean, I watch how my folks are teachers, retirees that work so hard that can't even budget for it because they're paying the highest insurance rates in the country, right here in my backyard. And, the Justice for All Civil Rights Act gets to those core values of pushing back against that corporate greed, that kind of discriminatory practice. They're getting better at hiding that intent, and we need to show, nope, if it's on the ground and as it's implemented, it's discriminatory in its practice, then yes, you are violating our civil rights.
So I am Antonia Yuhas, and we're reporting live from the Julia Morgan Ballroom at the She the People Summit. Our guest is Rashida Tlaib, and our listeners know that 20 years ago or more, I was a legislative assistant for John Conyers Jr. working in Washington, D.C. And you know that Conyers represented that district for decades and decades and decades. He had a machine that supported him, a Democratic Party machine. You come out of the Democratic Socialists of America. Have you felt that that party machine has supported you in Detroit, yeah, moving into D.C.? Is that a supportive relationship?
Yeah, I can tell you, look, I don't like boxing myself with these different labels. I can tell you I'm part of a new era of Democrats. Some of us are members of DSA and League of Women Voters and all these. And these are memberships of organizations that believe in the same values. I mean, for me, DSA has been my partner from the beginning in pushing back against corporate tax breaks. When I couldn't get in some of my own colleagues to push back against shifting school aid money towards a hockey stadium in downtown Detroit. That's how... and I needed that partnership. So I became a member because I needed them to come on board. And I truly believe in trying to ensure that every child and resident in my district has a just and equitable society to live in, that they have access to thrive. But what I can tell you is, for us, this is not about some new party movement. This is just, we're a group of women of color that understand what it means to have student debt, understand what it means to raise young children in an America that is just spewing out hate from the White House. We are coming from a unique, different lens, and people want to box us in. People want to kind of label us. What I can tell you is that we're Democrats. It's just a new kind of Democrats coming into the movement, and I am so happy that I'm part of this historic movement. I mean, it is going to be incredible to have Teacher of the Year next to me, Jahana Hayes, mm-hmm, and Ayanna Pressley, and all these just incredible women that I know understand what it means to walk onto a floor where half of your colleagues are millionaires. They're in an income bracket that will truly never understand the struggles back home. And I'm honored and humbled by the chance to be able to be a voice and get a seat at the table so that they can feel like they're being heard.
How much do you feel that the policy struggles that you're going to be engaged in are going head to head with the Trump administration and the Republicans, and how many struggles are going to be pushing the Democratic Party to be more progressive?
I think it's going to be a combination. I don't think of it that way. You know, I'm a person and that doesn't think of things as strategy or political strategies. Like, there's a need, I want to address it. And sometimes the barrier will be maybe other colleagues that are in different committees that are important to my district, or and it just means me pushing harder and advocating harder. What I loved about Congressman Conyers at the time is he didn't just vote the right way on the floor. I'd never had to check him on his votes. But he also came home and was part of a movement and part of a grassroots movement. And that's where I come from. And not only am I going to fight there, but I'm also going to fight in the courts. And sometimes that means people that tend to maybe seen as somebody that supports, school aid funding equal education funding based on need in those that believe in the privatization of our education. I call it the education industry because it's become such a for-profit industry that there are going to be people that might have a D next to their name that might be a struggle and a challenge. But I think that's why people elected me. I think they know that I had that courage to push back.
Well, as a representative in Congress, you're going to be taking on domestic policies, but also foreign policy issues. And right now, of course, we tend tend to have those foreign policy issues eclipsed by our domestic policies. Yet, one of the critical issues in this country is how the U.S. treats Israel and Palestine and the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Your unique background is also places you in a very interesting and unique position on this issue. How are you going to push on this issue? What policy positions are you going to take on specifically the Israeli-Palestinian issue and a score of other issues around the U.S.'s intervention in the Middle East?
Yeah, I think that it's important to know, I grew up in a city that every corner is a reminder of the civil rights movement. Every corner is some birth of something regarding the labor rights movement. Many of my teachers experienced being discriminated against because of the color of their skin. They couldn't live in certain neighborhoods. Some even recalled walking as a child in the Martin Luther King, you know, next to Dr. King with their parents. All of that comes with me because as a child going to Palestine with my mother, seeing her in a separate line, seeing the different color license plates, the different color kind of passports and the treatment of, you know, you can't travel here or you can't work in this area or you can't live in this area. You know, I believe truly that integration of a school system can change that whole dynamic there. And I love and embrace the fact that when, you know, that the type of Netanyahu's, you know, Israel, just like Trump's America, that doesn't align with many of the Israelis and very much doesn't align with, of course, Palestinians. We have to embrace that and welcome that. And I love that when Netanyahu declared Hebrew as the official language, Israelis and Palestinians marched together. They protested together. People don't talk about that. And that's what I want to support. I want to support that organic movement while they are coming together, pushing back against that division that is happening from within. And but I think as Americans, but as Americans, we need to stop choosing sides and choose values and sit back and allow us to not be bullied in positions that dehumanize one or the other. And I won't let, you know, the far left tell me that Israel, you know, Israelis are this or that, because I'm not going to reflect what Netanyahu's doing on all of the Israeli community. And I'm not going to do the same thing when Palestinians, you know, want to be able to feel loved and respected and equal, that I'm not going to share those stories that of my grandmother and my grandparents. I'm there as a child immigrant. My roots around activism starts in Palestine, you know, and that is something that comes with me as a member of Congress.
Well, Rashida, I want to thank you so much for joining us and good luck to you, Rashida Tlaib, running for U.S. House of Representative seats unopposed from Michigan's 13th Congressional District. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Rashida Tlaib is the Democratic nominee for Michigan's Congressional District 7, running unopposed, former member of the Michigan House of Representatives. She spoke at the She the People Summit in San Francisco on September 20th, 2018. Special thanks to my co-host, Antonia Yuhas, and to KPFA Pacifica Radio for sponsoring this coverage. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.